We're about to talk about strategic media organizing. It's a panel just to talk about some recent developments in the media democracy movement. And my name is Pete Tredish from the Prometheus Radio Project, which is a group that of media organizers that helps to start low-power radio stations and advocate on policy issues. You want to just introduce yourself?
My name is Nan Osek, faster than the speed of light.
And we'll try to use the mic since those folks are trying to record. We're thinking of this as a more of a discussion than other panels, so we'll probably just sort of pass it around and have all kinds of really ugly mic noises. So the reason that we're... Oh, that's nice. The reason that we have this panel, and actually, I'm going to be able to look at all of you, out poised to blow wide open. Over the past bunch of years, it's been relatively small, limited to a relatively small group of sort of policy wonks in Washington talking about who owns what. All of a sudden, in the past 2 or 3 years, we've had a couple of really surprising successes. One of the really dramatic successes was the success in taking back Pacifica, actually reversing a trend towards corporatization in media. The success of the low power movement in getting new licenses for community radio stations, and we've had a number of sort of, you know, I'm sorry, I'm just gonna.
Hey, yo, we're starting over here. So, give me someplace else.
Okay. Nice. Nice. So diplomatic.
Thanks, Pete.
So they moved 5 feet.
So heard them.
So we've had a number of these successes that have really surprised no one more than ourselves. A relatively small group of people that have actually made some significant policy advances, and I feel that fundamentally our movement has had a very serious problem, and that problem is that very few people think of media as their main issue. For the left wing in this country, media is kind of issue number 10 or 12. You know, there's the environment, there's civil rights, there's all these things, and they all come before
jobs.
Media. There's so many. And people always think of media as sort of the last thing. If you look at the right wing in the United States, their issues are guns, abortion, and then the media. And they have organized their movement accordingly. The Christian right has aggressively pursued buying up as many TV and radio licenses as it can. They own newspapers. They have a massive media infrastructure compared to the left. And a lot of people, you know, sort of think that left media is not all that important. They say, oh, these guys, they're all just sitting around talking to themselves, preaching to the choir. And what the American right understands is that it is really, really important to preach to the choir. It is really important to build your base, to build the people up that actually do agree with you, and take them from being sort of, you know, people that sort of agree with you, and turning them into activists, people that are willing to move, people that are willing to, like, go to their congressman and, you know, and force them to change their vote on things. And so, first of all, there's the preaching to the choir, and second of all, it does end up becoming outreach, because as you get a bigger choir, suddenly you start being capable of generating a larger congregation. And it's a key thing that the left in this country has decided not to prioritize media. And it's interesting, because everyone understands it's a big problem. Every single activist I ever talk to, they say, I just came back from Palestine, and it's incredible what I saw. I saw people getting shot on the street by the Israeli soldiers. I saw the incredible poverty and the devastation. That's thing number one, thing number two. And then the third thing they always say, and the media lied. The media did not tell the story. So it's actually, it's the second or the third thing on everybody's mind, but it's the 10th or 12th thing that anyone's willing to do anything about to make a change. And I think that a lot of our challenge over the course of the next years is turning that, you know, that second thing that is on everybody's mind into the second thing that they take action on, and that they are ready to think strategically, to apply their organizing skills that they learned in fighting for East Timor or for the environment, and fighting for a media environment that is that frees us from the wealth-based capitalist broadcasting system and media system that we have. So I think that people are starting to realize that it isn't even just the news. It isn't even just that, you know, General Electric, which should be a major topic of conversation in the media, instead is a media empire holder that can completely skew the news. It isn't even just that at this point. I think that there's a growing realization that we live in a system of media that even when it's just about entertainment, it's not about entertainment. It's about profit. And that what we have to face off with a culture, some important person whose name I can't remember, he said that if I had a choice between controlling the laws of a country and controlling the songs that people sing, I would choose the songs that they sing, because that's what goes straight to their heart. That's what, you know, that's what creates their values. That's what creates what's important to them. And people are realizing that the media system that we have now, it doesn't create citizens. It doesn't grow people into their responsibilities as members of a democratic society. It grows people into consumers, and it grows people into sort of passive objects. It grows their ears for the advertisers and their eyes for the advertisers, and really very little else about them. So we're on the brink of people being ready to realize this. And at the point that we are about to have a movement, I'm not saying that we're going to be as big as the environmental movement or as the civil rights movement or the women's movement. But I think that the media democracy movement is all of a sudden going to be about 10 times bigger than it was. And there was a retreat that we recently went to start thinking about what it would mean to have a movement that's 10 times or 20 times bigger and is going to have to be, well, I hope at least 4 or 5 times more organized than it has been. And so we went to this retreat to sort of talk about those issues, to talk about what it's going to mean to cross the gap from a movement that is built of, you see, again, it's that key problem of the media movement is that in order to understand the media as a key issue, you generally have to have had an experience in a movement of having been lied about, having been distorted, having your issues destroyed in the face of the movement to see. And the other effects are kind of subtle. I mean, the ways in which the media structure and our media system erodes our families, erodes our communities. I mean, for Christ's sakes, right now there are so many people who know the characters on sitcoms better than they know their neighbors, and these characters on sitcoms are not just the figments of some artist's imagination. They are market tested and focus group created entities that are designed to just sort of appeal to whatever will keep our eyes glued to the tube. That's a dangerous moment, and in order to have a realization about that, it's tough to get there without coming from a position of relative privilege. I mean, I don't have so many friends. I have some friends that are in jail and have been churned through the criminal justice system. if my life circumstances were a little different, I would have a lot more friends that were going through the criminal justice system. And, you know, I probably wouldn't be a media organizer. I would probably be a criminal justice organizer. And so that is a major roadblock for our movement, because it keeps our movement small and it keeps it rather inconsequential. So we recently just had a meeting at Highlander, and I'm going to turn it over to Nan, to talk about what it's going to take us to go beyond what we are and get to what we have to be in order to create effective change, in order to get past the choir of media organizers right now and start putting people's struggles in the center of the movement for media reform, so that we can really make a tent that everyone can get in. So I'll turn over to Nan.
I want to just expand a little bit on what Pete was saying about this being a particularly important moment. He was talking. He talked now about people not getting cultural nourishment and feeling that they have a sense of empowerment. I think since 9/11, though certainly before that, in an accelerated fashion since that, there's been a general unease in the population about the news they're getting. It's not even a question of the characters they're seeing on TV or anything like that. They're nervous because they don't trust what they're seeing on the mainstream media. They don't have any alternatives, or very few. But they don't trust it. And this is a very interesting moment, because here we are, you know, in a virtual war, and our government is trying to reassure us, and people are not being reassured. It's almost the opposite. The more they're trying to reassure us, the more people are saying, wait a minute, we don't really know what's going on, you know. So it's not just a moment for us within the media activist community to be thinking about this. There's really an opportunity for us to be able to capture regular sort of folks on some level or another who are looking for something that they find more honest about the news and information that they're getting, and that's not solely treating them like passive consumers that are just supposed to sit there and buy stuff. People know something is wrong with the system, and they know something is wrong with the media system. So this really is a general moment that we can take advantage of, or that we felt we should try to take advantage of, in terms of building something that had much more visibility. There were about 20 of us who were able to participate in this retreat at the Highlander Center. I just wanted to ask, who here knows what the Highlander Center is? About half. The Highlander Center is located in the eastern part of Tennessee. It's a farm. And it's been in existence since the 30s as a center for organizing and training people involved in social justice activism. It's one of the places since the 60s that was key in developing the strategies, tactics, and leadership within the civil rights movement. And just a few minutes ago, Errol was talking about Martin Luther King coming up with a strategy to work with white people. They did that at the Highlander Center. So it actually has a very important place historically in movement building, and particularly movement building around social justice issues. And it was actually quite a privilege to be there on a retreat for a few days and think about not just the historical things that had happened there, but the possibilities for us being able to launch or at least initiate some kind of similar things. There were about 20 people there, and they represented different aspects of media organizing and activism. And the focus for the discussion was on advocacy. It was not on production or content. So the people who were present were individuals who were executive directors of organizations, people formulating policy in Washington, people who ran certain kinds of community-based media projects, and that included the Media Alliance in San Francisco, several community technology centers which are very much places where low-income and working-class people, people who don't have access to computers, go for training and internet access, among other things. We had a number of people in Washington who have been involved in actually developing legislative and regulatory language that goes like to the FCC and Congress and things like that, but all focused around media issues. And we also had a number of people that were doing organizing, like with young people around media issues. Young people are real interested in the media because they don't get their media either, among other things. And people representing the indie media community and community radio, community television, and low-power radio and broadcasting. So it was an extremely disparate group, and not certain that there really were a lot of common things in terms of people's day-to-day work and how people weren't actually certain how they related, particularly the gap between people who were working in sort of technology areas and people working on broadcasting areas. So there wasn't any assumption that there was unity between these groups in terms of even talking about what it meant to be a media activist in this environment. So on one hand, we all felt the same way about this being a key moment for us to try and have more solidarity among ourselves, but also not really certain what that might look like or how it would work. And the final kind of factor in that is that nobody's wealthy in this business. None of the organizations are particularly well supported. But even among the very meager resources that have been available for supporting any kind of media organizing or activism, it's disappearing. And some of the places that had been fairly significant supporters up till now are pulling back or actually eliminating some of their support. So there was also kind of an element of real sort of fear about whether we could even support our own movement activities, since the sources of money that we had been able to rely on in some, you know, uneven fashion, a lot of them were actually specifically saying they weren't going to be funding this kind of work anymore. And the last factor in the group that was there, and that's reflected very much throughout our own activities, is that because we were not the producers, we were not the Amy Goodmans and the Laura Flanders. People, we represented the people who keep those organizations going. There's no glamour in it, and there's not a lot of visibility for it. So all of these things were brought together at Highlander to talk about what do we do, and how can we transform this into something that actually will have some impact and power. The focus of our discussion, I think, was really on some of the things that were brought up a little bit on the previous panel, and particularly in Errol's remarks. I will say that among the 20 or 21 people there, half were people of color. And that was very significant in terms of the discussion and in terms of the representation around the issues. And in talking about how to articulate the issues around media and its importance to our communities and the social justice movements that are being organized that Pete had mentioned, some, you know, as examples, was the real importance of people who don't have access to any of this media. We were in the South, and it was, you know, pointed out to us that, you know, media activism in Tennessee and Georgia and Alabama means, can you even get your press release in the newspaper? It's not even a question of community broadcasting or, you know, free speech access. And in a lot of instances, there are also not community technology centers, so these people don't necessarily have easy access to the internet in a lot of places as well. And there's not even infrastructure to get it. So the question of what it means to be organizing around media at this point in time isn't solely a question of protecting what we have, and we know we really have to protect what we have. I think we've heard a few examples of it, and there's certainly a lot more. But also really looking seriously at the impact that media has on a very basic level in people's lives who don't have the kind of privilege that Pete was referring to, and how to really make media serve in a democratic fashion.
to people here and also in other parts of the world, but we're talking about organizing in communities around the United States primarily. So our discussion turned in large part around the questions of race and class within media activism and media organizing, and how to really bring that into a central consciousness of our work, particularly when we're surrounded by a social environment that at this point is telling us we're a raceless society, you know, racist issues kind of disappeared, everyone's on an even playing field. I mean, the propaganda is actually telling us that these issues don't matter at all, anymore. You know, like last year they disappeared, they don't matter anymore, when in fact we all know that they actually matter very deeply. And that if we were in a position to kind of change the, shift the dialogue among us and among social justice groups around the central importance of media, not just in getting your message out, but in actually reflecting the things that are important to us as progressive people and people who believe in justice, that would make a tremendous difference in the movement as a whole. Because then we wouldn't be marginalized media activists over here. Our ability to work as media activists would be in support of, and vice versa, of the broader social justice movements, who all know that media is kind of important, but, you know, they don't know quite what to do. So in the course of our discussion over a couple of days, we came up with a number of areas that we thought we could begin to initiate some impact and start a discussion of change around these things. And instead of calling what we were doing media democracy, because outside the United States, democracy can be a dirty word, given the imposition of democracy equals capitalism in a lot of places, and how democracy is not seen as participatory or particularly liberating to people, and certainly not eliminating oppression or economic exploitation at all. And instead, to think about using the paradigm similar to economic justice. We all know the shift that came about in the environmental justice movement, when the environmental movement was confronted with the issues relating to racial justice in environmental activities and adopted the term of environmental justice, that we should adopt the term of media justice, which actually gives it a different kind of cast and a different context for what we're doing. And so we just called ourselves the Media Justice Gathering. We have taken on several tasks for ourselves to do, but it's not for us. It's really for us to bring back to all the networks that we're involved in see how much we can use this to both energize the work that we are doing and also be able to have it really be have an impact within the broader social justice movement in a way that we feel is really possible at this moment in time. So we kind of picked five areas that we felt that among all the people there that we could work in and that we knew people in and that we actually knew how to start this discussion. The first is one that Dee Dee actually mentioned last night, and that is that we thought we could start developing, along with all of the people that we work with and our allies in our communities, popular education materials, specifically around media. Because it's not just it's not just enough for us to like have a handout or something. And the analysis, I mean, a lot of the media organizing starts from an analysis of concentration of ownership and, you know, how it's not good for the democratic process. You know, that's just not going to fly in a lot of neighborhoods. so we want to be able to start developing some popular education materials that are really reflecting the media issues in the context that people understand in their struggles. And of course, that isn't something we do by ourselves. And the whole concept of using popular education, it's even like, you know, using puppets and direct action and stuff like that. You put things in terms that people understand, and it's based on the analysis that they bring to the table. So you don't start with saying, you know, we want to break up, the Time Warner, AOL merger. And we might want to do that, but that's not where you start. You start with what it looks like on your cable set at home. and why we already know people are concerned about how much it's costing them and how it may limit their internet access and how they still don't see themselves on TV, etc. So that's what the popular education materials would be. The second is to really think about the terms that we could use for shifting the dialogue around media with social justice groups in a serious fashion, not just in a sort of, I know, I mean, people, some of us have talked about these things, but it's always like, why aren't they interested in our issue? We have to start from the other side, which is, it's not our issue. And we, you know, to kind of change our own approach to this in a way of media really being central to all of the cultural and values transmission that's going on, and that really has an impact on everyone, and particularly on the nature of political organizing in this country and the issues that we're all really facing. The third is to organize some more money. We really need to confront that with the things that have been going on, not just within foundations, but also on the grassroots level, and to come up with a lot of other ways to be much more self-supporting. Mm-hmm. We can't rely on some of the sources of money that we've had. And we should be able to, we're smart, we're creative, we can come up with great ideas about being more self-supporting. And, you know, even in the economic contraction that we're going through now, to be able to support the work we do or make it, you know, cheap. The fourth area is to continue to support in a more comprehensive fashion the policy work that's actually being done in Washington on behalf of protecting our media interests. This is really important work. It's thankless. You know, the people who work in D.C., you know, drafting those stupid briefs for the FCC, I mean, who wants to read it? But if they don't do it, our frequencies are gone, our spectrum is gone, our ability to actually access some of these things directly will be lost. And these people need our support, and they need our thinking to help them make sure that these basic issues around economics and class and race, etc., are reflected so that people understand that what they're doing really does have an impact on them. And they also need more help when they can get it. There used to be quite a number of groups in Washington that were working on sort of broadcasting and media reform, and now there's a handful, maybe four or five. And a lot of these are one- and two-person shops. They're really small, and these guys bust their butts, seriously. So we need to give them some help and real support. And the last area that we also thought could also be very transformative, particularly within our own environment, is one that Didi also talked about last night, and that is using the UNESCO meeting that's coming up next year, and that also will be aimed towards another meeting in 2005, a global meeting on the information society, for us to use that to organize broadly around issues of communication rights and media concerns, very similar to the way people use the Durban conference around race and racism to organize around race. It didn't mean everyone was going to go to Durban, but that dialogue was sparked all around the country. We can do the same thing. And that Didi's analogy of using the Geneva meeting as sort of the WTO for media is something that we can do, and we can start mobilizing and really educating people around that now. So these are the areas that our Highlander Media Justice Group came up with that we are capable of doing, and that the next steps for us were to let everybody know and start getting people active in all of these different areas, and we think there's enough for everyone to jump in. So,
campaigns.
I was just gonna throw out a few of the campaigns that I happen to have heard about or know about or upcoming events, and then we're just gonna sort of throw it open to a larger discussion of, you know, of what we've talked about so far about how the media movement is gonna move beyond what it has been so far. And also some about these campaigns. One or two key things. Well, there'll be more than one or two. There is a giant debate about the future of the internet that is in the course of blowing itself open. And there are some very scary developments in terms of the advent of cable companies owning the main source of internet access for most of us, and because of the vagaries of the sort of various layers of stupid telecommunications regulation, the internet that we're used to may very well not be there in 5 years, 10 years.
2 years.
2 years. Already, for many people, there is a very different internet than perhaps you're used to. I've heard the statistic that 80% of AOL users never get past AOL's sort of walled garden of sites and content.
Does everybody know what a walled garden is? Anybody not know? Do you want to switch
to that? Basically, the way that they structure their browsers, the way they structure your access, they sort of keep you inside their realm. So if you want to search to buy a houseboat, you go to their search engine for their classifieds. If you want to date someone, you go to their dating service. You go to the AOL dating service. It's sort of the company store model of the internet. It's not that wide open, Wild West sort of thing that you hear the techno enthusiasts talk about. It's actually a very shrewd business model. And because the internet is almost completely unregulated, they've been allowed. People talk about that creating freedom. Actually, it's created freedom for corporations to design the most narrow, predatory business models that they can possibly come up with in order to restrict consumer choice, in order to capture us as consumers. There's a lot of stuff going on around that. One of the a great thing that's happening in that is that the media democracy movement is starting to move past the idea of, okay, well, we're three lawyers in Washington and we're going to say all the right things to the right senators and the right congressmen and the right people in the FCC. Well, now that the FCC is pretty much bought and owned again, as it usually is, by the business interests, people are saying, okay, we've got to start doing grassroots organizing. We've got to move to the strategies of corporate campaigning. And so there's a number of town meetings coming up, and a number of there's a corporate campaign against the AT&T Comcast merger, which is very important, and which certainly your listeners should know about. Another thing that is kind of, you want to just take turns on them?
Yeah, just put the mic in the middle.
Okay.
One of the big campaigns that's going to be starting in September is the Consumer Federation of America. Consumer Federation of America, which probably you think of as just like, you know, Consumer Reports and stuff like that, they actually have been extremely involved in issues relating to consumer, the impact of telecommunications activities on consumers. They've been a very strong ally in this. They also represent, you know, like 300 million people in the United States. They're actually a membership organization of groups, local groups in all around the country. And they have, I don't know, like 300 organizations are members of their federation. And they're going to be launching a campaign in September on telecommunications as a consumer issue. They're going to be doing town hall meetings and electronic and virtual meetings all around the country, and they're really going to make this a big issue for their constituents.
A personal favorite of mine, since we're directly involved in this one, is Prometheus and Media Alliance are launching a campaign against Clear Channel Communications. Clear Channel Communications, they own 1,200 radio stations. They own, like, 300,000 billboards? 700,000 billboards. They own significant properties overseas. They own one of the largest concert promoting businesses, and they've been moving towards both a vertical and a horizontal monopoly. That means that they not only do they own all the radio stations, but they own all the concert venues, and they own the music promotion business, and so they have an incredibly inordinate power over the shape of that, the culture that we were talking about before. They're the ones that decide what kind of songs you hum in your head, whether you're humming Public Enemy tunes, or you're humming "I'm Gonna Take My Clothes Off" all summer long. So so we are targeting them. It's a corporate campaign that is maybe a little bit different than some of the ones that we've seen before, because we really don't want anything from these suckers. These guys, their business model is so corrupt that they could not make a penny if they changed anything. They're already like having financial troubles because they make such a bad product that nobody wants to listen to. So there's nothing that they could do to change their behavior. They couldn't reform themselves. We don't want them to hire back all the people they fired, although we wish they would. We don't want them to do any of that. We just want to hold them up and spank them. And we want to make sure that people know that this is not an acceptable future for the media in this country, to have clear channel communications, the people that bring you, Dr. Laura and all that crap, also being the people that bring you the Philadelphia Inquirer, and also be the ones that own your cable, your cable channel, and also be owning everything else. And so, our main goal is to have an impact on the next round of media consolidation. And let me say, that is extremely scary. In the spring of 2003, we are going to see a number of dockets going before. They've all been consolidated. And they, at the same time, are going to ask these questions. They're going to say, well, so what's wrong with the same company owning the daily newspaper, the alternative news weekly, the cable channel, a third of the radio stations, half of the TV stations? What's wrong with that? Nothing. And in a single town. So we need to take the spectacular failure of Clear Channel as a public interest media license owner and show the FCC, show the Congress, show everybody that it's just a bad idea. Even show Wall Street, because Wall Street is slowly starting to realize that it's just not all that great an idea. So that's sort of the aim of the Clear Channel campaign.
Coming directly from that, Pete referred to this docket in 2003. What the FCC has done is they're launching with opening up what they're calling their omnibus examination of media ownership, and they're throwing in newspapers and stuff because there's rules that have been on the books around prohibiting cross ownership between TV stations and newspapers in the same city, etc. They are going to throw it all in the same pot, and it's real important for us to know, when you read something that says the FCC omnibus legislation, this is what they're talking about, which is the big media ownership legislation. Our popular education will probably come up with some, sexy name for this. But in the meantime, there's a little bit of stuff that's happening in Congress, and one of the campaigns is to push the issues that'll be pushed on the ground with Clear Channel in Congress. And Bernie Sanders, bless his heart, has already kind of made the first shot across the bow by sort of drafting a letter that says he's really concerned about this and he thinks Congress should take a look at it. And Fritz Hollings, in the Senate side, has also said sort of the same thing. Now, we don't really know where he's exactly coming from on this, but it's very likely that congressional hearings may be opened up around these ownership issues, and Clear Channel could easily be the poster person. So it's actually the campaign, another side of this, not the same campaign, but another side of this would be to make sure that our legislators and our representatives in Washington know how we feel about this. And if they're going to do something about it, we want it in public, and we want it, hard hitting. We want them to, bring Clear Channel up and really see how bad this is. And this is going to force the FCC to do something differently instead of Michael Powell, who doesn't think the FCC really has any job.
Some other key campaigns, these are ones I know less about, but there's a terrifying thing happening in internet music licensing, where basically one of the few places where you're seeing a lot of new creativity, a great new model of radio, the sort of the future of radio, a place where there isn't spectrum scarcity, where there aren't all those sorts of issues, you're seeing that since they didn't have the rationale of having to be the traffic cop and say, you know, that only the rich could be the broadcasters by using spectrum licenses, what they're using instead is intellectual property licensing and music licensing through the RIAA. And what people should understand, and what I couldn't understand for the first 6 months that I read about this, is that this issue, it's not about fair rates, it's not about any of that sort of thing. It's not about compensating artists, although artists, you know, will be compensated as a result of it and so on. This deal was constructed with the intention, it was a bargain between the RIAA and Yahoo. And what and both of them, strangely enough, got what they wanted, because the RIAA wanted a lot of money for the music streams. Yahoo didn't want they did not want competition from you. So they said, we will be happy to pay as much as you want for the music licensing on these streams, because what that will mean is that all of these scruffy people that started their internet radio station in their own house, their little Beethoven.com business, their little this, their little that, that's going to put them all out of business. And so the only internet broadcasters are going to be the ones that are aggregators, that are places like Yahoo, that are places like Live365, it's going to be just a small market with a few key players that will be as consolidated as any other media market. That's the issue here, and we just lost a fairly big battle on that. You know, as always, when we lose, it's described as a compromise, because what was originally demanded was so incredibly inordinate that it really probably wasn't even legal. We lost this round, but we're starting to see interest in Congress. There are bills that are being introduced in order to bring the whole question around again and undo what the Library of Congress did in setting the rates that way.
I want to mention one more thing, and then I think I've seen the hands. We really need to open it up.
I just wanted to say that out of the copyright session yesterday, some of us met at lunch, and we're working on a campaign for specifically for community radio and college broadcasters. But we'll have some more to say about that at the plenary.
The last thing I wanted to mention is actually not a campaign per se, but should be like local thing, and that is that in a lot of cities, cable franchises are coming up for renegotiation. These are done on a municipal basis, which means it has to be city by city. But there's a huge possibility that in a lot of places, the franchise holder is going to try and eliminate cable access, support for cable access, and funding for cable access. So all of these things are things we kind of got an eye on, and we're hoping to, that people also will be keeping an eye on them, particularly when there's things like these local activities in addition to the national things that are going to go on, and see how much of this we can really use to sort of build a new groundswell.
So I just want to say, all right, did you hear the contradiction there? We just talked about how we're going to try to move towards, you know, an agenda of inclusion and focusing the discussion, around where social justice activists already are. And then we named four campaigns that are really wonky, right? They're about ownership, and they're complicated technical issues and so on. And one of the things I would love it if people speak to is, how do we bridge the gap? Because the things that I'm not saying that what we just were talking about wasn't important, because it's damn important. But what is the way that we're going to start thinking about this in a way that reaches people? How is it that when you talk about media to people, that you're talking not so much about, isn't it bad that, you know, one corporation owns all this? But you're talking about, you know, what's the impact on it as you as a parent? That, you know, when you're doing something else and your kid's in front of the TV for 3 hours, they come back a homicidal maniac. What is the impact on our lives of having a media that isn't really designed for us to grow as people, but that is a media that's designed to line the pockets of a few small corporations. So with an eye to that, with an eye to like what...
Give me the microphone.
Yeah, yeah. Here you go.
Can I, on the way over, I know there was somebody from Critical Resistance back there a little while ago, and they did a really brilliant coupling of the critical criminal justice issues with environmental issues and that were of concern to a local community in Fresno, and maybe they can talk about that.
Hi. I'm Pleasant, actually. thanks so much for all this information. Here's some suggestions. This is some strategy ideas. Have a fucking emergency broadcast, like actual emergency broadcast. Play the beep on your radio stations and take a half, you know, 3 hours and sound the alarm about these issues, not with like talk and recordings of this conference, but with, you know, programming just about this. It's got to like wake people up. That's, I mean, that's the answer to your question. How do you reach them? With programming that is alarmist, because this is fucked up. What do you think? Can you do it?
We're not advocating anything illegal.
Can you handle the programming challenge?
No, I mean the emergency broadcasting would be illegal if it was done.
Just go beep.
If we did the.
I'll do it. It's recorded. You can use that one.
When was the last time you had one of those?
Whatever. Let's get beyond the beep. So, I mean, I don't have control of a radio station and stuff. I want to know response right now from people. What do you think of that? I mean, are you going to do it? I'm a listener, and I'm demanding it. So...
You woke Carol up. What?
Like with the Clear Channel campaign, that's one of the things that I came here to do, is to try to talk to people who are working in grassroots radio, who are programmers and who are broadcast talent, who are interested in taking the issue on as their own, and because they have a listenership, because they have an activist base and a community base who supports them, tailoring it to that particular community. Because Clear Channel certainly tailors their programming to the community, like not with any specific things that have to do with the community, but by taking one person in San Antonio and having them record this particular station in this community, and so that just addressing the particular crimes of particular affiliates of evil mass media corporations in local towns, which is exactly what grassroots radio exists to do, is a really great idea. And that's a very clever programming tactic you speak of. But there are obviously different ways that people can tailor their own programming to do exactly that.
Yeah, he had his hand up.
Oh.
Behind Hannah. Behind Hannah. Hannah.
Which person?
The gentleman in the blue shirt right behind you.
Mine's real short. I'm, as you all know, I'm probably one of the biggest wonks on the whole digital thing. And by the way, Clear Channel's a huge supporter of that. But one of the ways I found of grabbing people's attention was, I work in a children's hospital. I was going through the mortality tables, and I found that the number one cause of death of children, infant through age 14, is not drugs, it's not guns. Drugs don't even show up on the top five. The number one, by 34% is automobiles. And you never hear this on the radio, and I put up a website, censorshipkills.com, and said, why? You know, and I just showed how at car ads, etc. And that's it. I just think one shocking fact can sometimes do it. That the next killer down at 12% of all children at that same age range was drowning. Nothing, you know, we don't talk about that one a lot either. So that's it. Just a shocking fact or two, I think, sometimes helps.
My name is John Grebe from Boston, WZBC. I actually think we're in a historically unprecedented time of huge public awareness of the general problems we've been talking about concentration of ownership in media. I think there's never before been in the United States conditions like this, where so many people are aware that it's a problem, that under a dozen corporations own and control the content we see, hear, read, breathe, taste. there is rising public awareness of this. And it's not just on the left. The little minuscule left is on the right, too. And I think it's an incredible opportunity that we have to seize and go beyond our unfortunately small but growing left audience and go to the right and go to the mainstream and go to the people who haven't had the privilege of hearing a sensible argument from the left and talk about concentration of ownership and just plain old, simple, old-time democracy, values of democracy. I mean, you can go right back to Thomas Jefferson if you want. I mean, use that stuff. It's powerful. I don't agree with everything the man said by any means, but it's powerful stuff and we shouldn't neglect it. I also think that elder communities, if you can get, like, my grandmother's one of my biggest fans. If you can get people in diverse communities to write letters of support, to make your legislatures aware of these issues locally, that's really important instead of just hearing from the traditional left constituencies. I think we really have an opportunity to do this. I also think just a simple organizing tactic is that at every community access television station locally, they're very locally rooted. That means every single one of those local programmers at every single community access station in this country could reach, you know, at least 10 or 100 people they know by email, by letters. Have at your community access station a letter-writing campaign party on a Friday night and have music and have beer and everything else and have people sit down and write letters and invite your grandmother and your uncles and everyone who watches your local community access television program and have them get your representatives to take action on all this stuff. So I think there's incredible opportunities to do this stuff. And yeah, there's a little bit of it is too technical and some people want to get educated about that, and that's really necessary. But I think there's a lot of potential popular support for all of this.
Sorry. I just wanted to second that, getting the message out to the mainstream. A lot of folks are just beginning to wake up to the idea that media is anything other than just something to fall asleep to at night. And I wanted to make sure everybody knew about an organization called the Alliance for a Media Literate America, which is doing media literacy work in the schools. And check out the AMLA website if you're interested in that topic. I think it's very radical work. And although it might look pretty mainstream on the outside, as a teacher of media, I've found that just unlocking the key in people's hearts where they see the tools that media uses can be the first step to getting them to see what's going on the corporate media level. AMLA, Alliance for Media Literate America. And the other thing, I want to just respond to your comment. I think it's really important that instead of pointing fingers and saying, are you going to do this? You know, we are going to do this. And, you know, you step up and make the program and send it to the stations and we'll put it on. You know, you put it on when I send it to you. You know, you do what you need to do. And this, you know, us them thing, I think is, you know, not the right approach because we're all in it. We're all on the same side and we all got to do the thing that we do and do it together and support each other.
You know, I just wanted to, I'm Errol Maitland. I don't know. Does anyone know who this guy is here? This is Dennis Russo,
yeah, okay.
Otherwise known as Rupert. Okay, he is DCIMC. He runs the stream, and okay, you all know who I am. I'm Errol Maitland, and I am the producer in Wake Up Call in New York. So what that means is that I have access to 15 hours per week of programming time. In addition to that, I also engineer and be the announcer in WBAI from 6 o'clock basically in the morning until noon. So I have access to the breaks and other times on the air to promote issues, remind people. And one of the things about radio, when you say take 3 hours, it sounds good, but that may be taking 3 hours away from some other programming and other things that needs to happen. And in this society, if you haven't learned anything from commercials, that repetition, things that you hear regularly and often, and they push a button, they panic you. Don't necessarily have to know the facts behind it. It's good to know the facts, but if you get out, as Rupert, I think, was trying to say, that there is an impending emergency out there, and folks, you don't want it to happen to you, your community radio station, your cable, or whatever, and then to tell people who to contact to do something about it, it would help. Rosalie Hoffman, stand up, please. Rosalie... Rosalie Hoffman is one of the most persistent individual I know. She never raises her voice above 2 dB. Okay. But she just goes around and nags and nags. And when she can't nag, she whines. And when she can't whine, she writes things, and she persists and persists to get programming and ideas on the air. Okay, so I would suggest, Mr. Rupert, that in my absence at WBAI, that you go over there and make nice to Rosalie Hoffman. Now, when you make nice to Rosalie Hoffman, you're also making nice to the Democracy Now! Crew, because she will steal Amy's newspaper or hold Amy hostage or whatever, so she can't do Democracy Now! Until Amy say, Jesus Christ, I'll do it. Okay? She also has a habit of putting stuff in front of Amy. And when you put things in front of Amy in the morning, what does she do, Rosalie? And she takes it with whether or not you put it in front of her. She takes everything. But she reads it. She reads it on the air. Sometimes it's right and sometimes it's wrong. And she reads it and she looks like a fool or she looks good. But that's what Rosalie does. So you have access. It is finding the ways of getting it out there. Now, Rupert is also broke. See, he's penniless and he's shoeless. So maybe we can take up a little collection to get him to go to work and culling through the papers. He's also in Washington, D.C., by the way. Okay, right next to the FCC. And he knows how to make the internet fly. So maybe we can set him up in this project and being our early warning system to produce the materials to deal with the FCC.
All right, you motherfucker. I'll take up your challenge. I'll get off my ass. My name's not Dennis, so it's great that no one really knows who I am still. So, no, I think you know, I agree with what was said. Like, it's all about us. I do work with indie media, and I love it. I kind of instigated that for the sake of the recording, really, more than anything else.
No, but
but I mean, I want to, you know, move on to the next suggestion, away from mine. And
I want to follow up on your suggestion.
But we can do it.
Okay.
Programming out, you know,
No, I mean, I actually want to disagree with the person who said that you should just go do it. Okay, because I mean, I thought that this was a more strategic meeting, and there's nothing wrong with just going doing it. I've been doing it for a long, long time, as is everybody else in this room. But if we look historically at how we've been marginalized, right, and how with the kind of consolidation of media power, there's this vertical and horizontal, you know, assault on the information that hits us, we need to think strategically about how we can bring our group together to do the production together. I mean, wouldn't it be awesome? It will not work if Rupert does the most awesome show in the world. But if you look at all of our communities and all of our histories over the past, you know, 4 decades, actually, when you look back, you start looking back at it, and you look at our power, actually, to shift the voice to the grassroots, to citizens, to have a voice, and our power as media makers and all of our different media that we use to transform people to action. What could we do strategically so that it's not one more person go do it, you know, between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m. in the morning after all the other shit you're trying to do, right? So it's like I have an idea, and I don't know if people are doing this, so it's also a question, but I find it really interesting, like this fall, there's the NAMAC. Everybody know NAMAC? See, I mean, we have these fields that are so astoundingly disconnected because of our marginal status. NAMAC is the National Association of Media Arts Centers. The indie media people NAMAC is meeting in Seattle, where indie media is. It's movements that are functioning separately, but really, indie media was born out of the labor that many of these media arts centers across the country worked on. That's where Paper Tiger TV got their support. That's where Deep Dish came out of. So we have all these movements. If we look at the Alliance for Community Media, who never knew who NAMAC was, if we look at the CTC, if we look at the IMC, if we look at NAO, the National Association of Artists Organizations, if we look up at networks like Listen Up, where youth media makers across the country are networked, if we look at the AMLA, one I didn't know, and I teach media literacy, if we figured out some strategic summit to bring all those people together and then do Rupert's suggestion, which is together to make a campaign to blast people vertically and horizontally in, with all of our talents reaching all of our audiences, which would at that point reach millions, actually. I mean, in other words, we are organized. We're just marginalized. And it, what if we did all come together and then start making an emergency broadcast, which can be a faux emergency broadcast, a faux beep. But it's a great, great, great idea, but I think it would only be effective if we finally figure out how to bring all these movements together. And just as a final note, I think that's what's really great about this conference, is it's really attempting to make that bridge, and technology is forcing us to do it anyhow, right, as it's evolving.
I'm just thinking ahead right now, and I think the programming of this emergency broadcast can be regionally adapted for different community stations, but we can use, you know, the Indie Media Network or whatever to upload the sort of content. People can produce it, and then we edit it together. But then we have to be unified in communicating together and saying, okay, are you running it? Are you running the show that we're all putting together? And, you know, that then carries on and travels with us to the conferences, and then NAB thing in Seattle coming up, and I'm just brainstorming out loud.
And it's good. This I have a goddamn show. I'll run it.
I have three suggestions having to do with strategy. One is that I work on, and I have a nervous system problem, so my voice shakes on weekends like this weekend. It doesn't shake on the radio, but it does shake when people are looking at me.
Everyone turn around.
Okay. So, number one, I serve on the Public Access Commission in my community, and almost all of the locally produced programming is done by churches. They seem to be doing something right. Our public access channel, like many, I go to the Natoya Conference. The Natoya Conference is a conference of telecommunications folks. They're working on trying to get cable modems to be taxable so that that money can go to local governments like ours, and the FCC has ruled that cable modems are not taxable. So our cable access channel just lost a chunk of money. So in terms of the bottom line resources, we lost a chunk of money. That's one fight. People should know about Natoya.
Can you tell us what that stands for?
I don't know, it's NAOTA or something like that. I've been to their conferences, like the National Association of Telecommunications, yada, yada. And so I would like folks to take advantage of public access channels. I would like the Clear Channel campaign to send me a video that I can put on our public access channel about Clear Channel. I'm on TV twice a week, and everybody in town knows who I am. And I can't believe people are paying attention to the public access channel. But now I know. Now, because I sit on city council, people see me and they're like, oh, you're the woman who's always ranting about how the library needs to expand. So people do watch the public access channel, and mostly there are churches on TV, and there needs to be the Clear Channel campaign on our TV. So send it to me. Number two. People say, I constantly hear this amongst progressives, that we don't know how to reach out, and that's the case. I am not a mainstream person. I never have been. I'm not African American. I grew up, you know, lower middle class. I didn't grow up underclass. I don't know that perspective, and I'm not going to know. So, you know, I build websites, and when I build websites for universities, because I'm not an 18-year-old frat boy, I don't know what 18-year-old frat boys want out of websites. So I create focus groups. to figure out what 18-year-old frat boys want in websites, and I build that website. I suggest that the Clear Channel campaign and the Grassroots Radio Conference create focus groups like corporations do. They work. I mean, I'm a business, and it works. We create focus groups. We test that it worked out, and frat boys come to our websites. We can measure the fact that frat boys come to our websites, and we did the right thing. I want us to measure getting mainstream folks to come to the Clear Channel campaign, and the way to do that is to have focus groups, to have online surveys, for example, and I can tell you how to create completely cheap $10 a month online surveys. You can survey thousands of people, not a problem.
What's your email?
My email is danielle@ojctech.com.
Can you spell Danielle?
D-A-N-I-E-L-L-E. OJC Tech, T-E-C-H. So the second is to have a focus group with non-progressive activists and ask them what they need. I want to do this at our IMC. One strategy I would suggest in addition to focus group is to do, I forget the name of it, but you get a bunch of people. For example, our IMC, like all the women left. So we created this situation where women sit in the middle and they describe why they left and what the problems they were having at the IMC, and the men aren't allowed to talk. They sit on the outside, on the outer circle, and they watch the conversation, but they cannot participate. So you could create, you could ask people who you think have something to say about media but aren't in your group and have them sit in a circle and discuss how to create a Clear Channel campaign. Give them the basic information about what the situation is. Have them brainstorm ideas and have you all sit on the outside and listen and write down notes. That's another idea. The third thing is, I hate billboards. I'm trying to regulate against them in our city, and I think they're really useful for activist campaigns. So we're trying to get a billboard ban. I'm trying to lead the cause for a billboard ban in our city. But in the meantime, while there are billboards, I think the anti-Clear Channel campaign should have billboards. And you, Pete, will not have the message to put up there because you're too weird. You're not going to know what the message should be on that billboard. You need to have a focus group to figure out what will get the message across to them. And then the third thing, and I'll give up the microphone, is our community radio station has lots of opportunities for 3 to 5 minute drop-ins. Maybe you've talked about this already, but we would love to have you send us drop-ins that we can do during our morning menu where we have a mix of news and music, etc. And send it to us and we'll drop it in. I'll make sure it happens. Thanks.
We can email you all of our programs ready. Cool. Hi. Want to
come to you? Hi, I just wanted to say that in terms of forming coalitions, forming groups together, which is, I think, one of the points that's been made, I think we've this group called Activist News that we've just started combines a whole group of people, including people from People's Video Network, including Errol Maitland and Reem Kakuta, WBIX, WBII, Free the Media, Manhattan Neighborhood Network, which is a public access station in Manhattan, the International Action Center, and the African Caribbean Resource Center.
It's an emergency!
Yes! Okay, I'll wait for this thing. Okay, so we have this activist news thing, and we're going to be putting it out every other week, and it's going to go on the net, it's going to go on public access, it's going to go on radio, and it's going to go wherever people can put it out, multimedia. So we'd be glad to send you drop-ins. And we've got one show coming out. We've got some CDs and tapes available and some brochures. We're going to put it out every other week. And it's quite interesting to work in a coalition, but it really works. And it gives us a chance to really spread out our access. As Errol said, repetition and spread is really the key. So people hear it over and over again in different ways and in different areas.
Can
so,
I just say one thing else?
Anyone,
let's keep it moving around. I'm
yet.
Sorry.
Huh? Okay, our email info at activistnews.org.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to wonder if
all the different media organizations would be willing to drop all the other stories they want and concentrate, they run and concentrate on only one. If you want to get a powerful story across, everybody has to do it at the same time. And although there are very important stories about the environment and Palestine and everything else, you have to drop them for that period of time. When the insurance companies 10 years ago wanted to have a rate increase, suddenly, spontaneously, every newspaper, every television was talking about how these insurance companies were hurting. When the administration wants to put a particular idea across, that's all you read about. So if you're going to make an effect, you have to drop whatever else you're doing for a day or a week and only do that. And then suddenly, everybody will be talking about it and you'll have an impact. Otherwise, it's too confusing, too much else.
I disagree with that.
Wait, Errol, we have to let other people speak, please. Not a debate.
On the notion of dropping program or doing a special program, the Homelessness Marathon is a successful example of that. That those who have participated in it at up in Maine at WERU, we've had that's been a positive experience. So that's one way of doing it. Another way is you mentioned the emergency alert things. There's drop-ins of 3 to 5 minutes to educate. There's also just promos about an upcoming show that stations locally can program when they know they're going to have people's attention. So, and each station has those times where they know it will be most effective. But if throughout the week going up you hear an alarm, you know, your media is being taken from you, tune in to find out about it. That you know, locally that could be more effective. On the local issue, and maybe I can sometimes be a little provincial, you know, in terms of crisis that people have with cable access problems in their community, and folks have heard about this on Democracy Now! Recently at WGDR at Goddard College in Vermont. Carlos Haas, the former general manager, was recently fired when they let go most of the staff at the college. Couldn't be here because of illness. But if he was here, I don't know exactly what he'd be saying, but he'd be asking for people to be involved in some way or another. I don't know if the NFCB has any current information. I have an email on Carlos now that he's gone out of the station. But there's a Friends of GDR that formed, community people who want to have that station as a community station. The Board of Trustees heard one of their members on Democracy Now! Say, well, we were never about community. This was just an educational, we have an educational license, so this was never about community. And that community group is trying to compete with Vermont Public Radio and others to have that license. So WGDR.org info at WERU. I'll get in touch with Carlos to get some more information. But that's a station in the balance that would be no longer a community radio station in a place that has a really good history of community radio. And it's because the board of that college has no interest in it. Their board doesn't even, and I was talking with some members from the Friends of that group, and they said, how about some pressure on the board from local people to do something great for the community before they close down the frigging college? And they don't care. They don't live here. The board doesn't live here. They don't care. So maybe the board needs some pressure from national people, because maybe some of them live in one of our neighborhoods. So WGDR.org, that's the official website. And I don't know if the Friends group has one yet, but I'll look into that. So info at WERU.org, and I hope by next week I'll hope to have some information on that. Thank you.
Now, it's almost lunchtime. We're just going to take two more, and so preferably people that haven't spoken yet. Sorry about that. Also, there's a sign-up sheet for anyone that wants to get more involved in media democracy issues. They're coming. So I saw a hand there. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Sarah Flounders from Activist News. I wanted to pick up on a point that Sue Harris was just raising, because we've been discussing how to do really a program on the media takeover that's happening on every level. And it would be very interesting to do a program really focusing on Clearstream. And the idea behind Activist News is it goes out as a packaged program to 50 cable access stations every other week, to a whole number of radio stations, and it's streamed on the internet, audio and video. Now, just thinking how we could work together on this, of doing a program that would very much be focused on, for example, Clearstream, and a number of issues, and then working with a lot of people, see how widely we could get it out as a package with tapes, with CDs, with videos for many other people. Because one thing that we found whenever you work on a campaign is there, for example, there are cable stations that take your program every week all across the country. But then if you have a campaign, there may be hundreds of other cable programs, people who have regular shows, who will air that because it's an issue that they really agree with, understand, want to hear about, and so on. So I think we could really think about how to work on this, how to produce something that goes out very widely and that many people will take up, tune in, put on their program, listen to. So, see me if you're interested in that.
Do we have one more comment from someone who hasn't spoken yet?
I've spoken, but only if anyone else.
Okay, we want to close it out. Go ahead, John and Errol. And then we're going to wrap it up and go eat.
Please sign the sheet. And if you want to talk more about Clear Channel, I'm going to be meeting with a lot of people to brainstorm during lunch.
Just want to throw out a funding idea briefly. In the United States, where foundations are so concerned about their public image, and especially in the climate of nationalism in this country right now, just suggest an idea that a European media friend of mine seriously suggests, which is, what about the concept of going after funding where in this country we cannot really get much attention from foundations for media? And I know people like Nan are doing great work on this front, and I know it's improving. But from European foundations, or what about even European first world governments who know full well that the opinion of us and of the mainstream in the United States influences the suffering of people in the rest of the world. And I don't know much about the politics involved in this or the legality of it, but there may be money out there from foreign civic organizations, if not governments, that realize the power that we all have to convey what we already know, but we can't get funding from our own governments, whereas European countries fund their own citizens to organize and do programs to go to Nicaragua and bring material aid. Their governments fund it. So I just throw out that as an idea for another way of strategically thinking on a larger scale.
Reagan for Peace International, in effect, is what he's just talking about.
But it's in the South. And
yeah, but it projects after.
Elizabeth, did you want to say something, Elizabeth?
We're going to be talking tomorrow about community media globally. And I understand John's point, but I also, you know, right now, for example, AMARC, which is in a financial crisis internationally, is being carried in part by Africa, which is just ass backwards. And, you know, for good reasons, a lot of European countries and Canada, who have more enlightened foreign policies than we do, are at least giving back some of what they have stolen from that continent. And, we have expendable income. Even those of us who are in community media, and I'll talk a little bit about this maybe tomorrow, you know, as impoverished as we think we are very, very well funded relative to our brethren elsewhere. So I could not in good conscience, if somebody wanted to give me the money, I couldn't take it. And I'm sorry, that's all.
Okay, final word.
What's the sign of
Yeah, where's the sign-up sheet? You know, I heard somebody talk about church before, and one thing I know, I've been to church a few times, the devil alarm usually sound, but when you go to church, why they're on cable access, why they have so much of the radio frequency and spectrum, and why they get things done, is because they don't sit around like all you progressive people, all you, I don't know what to call you, because I can't call you activists, because I don't see no damn action taking place. Okay, all you people who control radio station and control times in radio station, all you people who have phones in your home, who call radio station, don't speak to issues that are real, or organize, to concertedly speak to an issue. So here we spend all this time talking about the problems facing the media community, and we haven't spent almost any time organizing to deal with it, with the people who have the power. You have the power to reach more people than any reverend in any pulpit in any community, and you reach those people even in the middle of the night. But you know what? We don't act. When that minister say, put your hands on the radio, the people put their hands on the radio. When he say, put your hand in your pocket and send me that $5 love offering, it gets sent. When that minister say, make the phone call, it gets made, and they organize and they do it. And we haven't learned to do it yet. And once again, we sit in the tent or we sit in the room and we talk about the problem. And then we all go on about our business and say, what a shame. What a shame. Well, Rupert, I will send you $20 because I know you're broke. You don't can't pay your phone bill, and you need to buy some CD to get this project going, and that you can call me. We will set aside some time to get this campaign going, either with the permission and the cooperation, the program director, WBAI, or without. We are going to do it the way we always do it. We're going to get it done, and we're going to put it out there. If folks wants to organize a day when this would go off nationally as a concerted effort, if they want to set up target phone numbers for people to call to target, if they want to set up the names of people that we need to write to, you can all do that. But guess what? I'm going to start it, and I'm going to do it. And with the 30 seconds that I may have in between announcing the programs that are coming up, I'll read the little blurb that Rupert over here is going to prepare for me and the package he's going to send me. And I'm going to give him the $20 so he can make the long distance call to New York or wherever I am to follow up to ask me if I got the material and if I'm playing it and how it's going. And after I play the material, Rupert, you're going to call me up and says, that's the way to go. Thank you very much. Okay? And when I come to Washington, D.C., you may even show me a good time.
You can sleep in my bed again.
You've slept in my bed before, Errol. You can sleep in it again. Okay, that's good practical knowledge.
I really think some people are ready for lunch.
Let's go.
Obviously, there's a lot of issues out here, both really concrete suggestions, ideas, and real activist stuff that I think we're really hoping is going to start being visible, and also some things that are going to take a while longer to develop, and some of them that are going to be percolating for a long time before we see any real results from it. But hopefully, this really will be a way to support some more long-term thinking where we can really shift the dialogue around the importance of media and have it be something that is really going to become a popularly supported idea, concept, and issue. And I'm just counting on everybody everyone has something to contribute to this. And all of us, all of you probably have ideas about it that you can take back and things that you actually can do yourselves. And anyone who wants to participate in this dialogue around the bigger sort of strategic questions that we laid out, just let me know. We're going to be setting up all kinds of national things to let people know what's going on and try and actually have working groups and, you know, local actions and as much as we can get generated. Thank you very much.
Boom, boom. Take over television and radio stations, boom, boom. The truth shall come.
We should do a radio theater.
SaveInternetRadio.org. Mayday, mayday. They've got PSAs that use the mayday. Have you heard them? They do the call to the alarm. It's mayday, mayday, internet radio, right? So they're using the same concept. So anybody's interested, check them out. SaveInternetRadio.org.